I'm Jay Moran.
I'm Bridget Jaipal Valenza.
I'm Thomas O'Neill White.
We need to get together and let our voices be heard.
This is What's Next. A dedicated hour to have important conversations about the issues facing the marginalized and underrepresented communities of Western New York and Southern Ontario.
If we're going to have some real healing, we've got to have space to tell some uncomfortable truth.
What's Next continues our mission to discuss race,
equity,
and the common concerns of Buffalo's East Side and beyond.
In the suburban area, everywhere, we must work and teach our children.
This is a special edition of What's Next. I'm host Thomas O'Neill White with Bridge host Tiffany Bentley, and we've taken over the Friday group chat spot with special musical guests David Jonathan in the inner city Bedlam. Joining us right now is drummer David Jonathan and manager Paul Cameron. Thank you both for being with us today.
Oh, thank you for having us.
It's a pleasure. Thank you.
It's amazing.
First off, the inner city Bedlam. How'd you come up with that name?
The inner city Bedlam name was, I guess, my attempt to tell stories of the inner cities. First with our inner city here within Buffalo, and then secondly, abroad. Because there's an inner city in all states, countries, there's an inner city somewhere.
Right, and what about Bedlam?
The confusion of it all. You know, the unfair injustices that are going on in our neighborhoods, the underfunding, you know, it's an outcry. You know, so the Bedlam is the inner city confusion.
I think you mentioned when we met last week that it's kind of the same, hood to hood.
Yeah, for sure. Absolutely.
Describe the band as a soundtrack to the inner city. What does that mean?
Well, as I stated, like, you know, I'm from the east side of Buffalo, and there's been so much blight and so many things that need to be fixed, and some things that have had Band-Aids on them, but, you know, no real solutions. And so when you're going through these stories and these different stories going on in the east side of Buffalo and other inner city areas, what does that sound like? You know, you asked me that, but there's despair there. There's happiness, there's joy as well, but there's also the negative side, you know, and trying to find a balance between the yin and yang of what's going on there, whereas other communities may just have yin.
And so the yin and the yang are kind of come through in the themes you explore, in the sounds, and you're not just a one genre band. Can you get into some of the themes you explore, your sound, and the genres you touch on?
Well, categorically, we will probably be cast as a soul band. But to me, soul encompasses jazz, it encompasses hip hop, it encompasses blues. It's kind of like a mixed pot of gumbo of everything, you know. So it's church, you know. We take you into all those areas and give you all of those feelings, you know. So whether you're religious or not, doesn't matter. We got something for you.
Yeah. Get the spirit of the Holy Ghost in you.
There you go.
When these songs start, what is your creative motivation? What gets them going for you?
It always starts out with a saying or an idea I have in my mind. Like, one of the songs we're gonna do today is called Lord Have Mercy. And one of the lines says, there's no haunted houses in the ghetto. And so how that came to be is, like, I'll just be driving in the east side or, you know, down Jefferson. I'm like, man, they always have all these paranormal activity shows on. You know, you talk to yourself, at least if you're me. I talk to myself all the time. And I'm like, ain't no haunted houses in the ghetto. Pad, pen, paper. And then I expound upon that. You know, why aren't there any haunted houses in the ghetto? What does that really mean? And so then I started to dive in and unravel, you know, the message I'm trying to reach the audience. You know, what is the point I'm really trying to drive that'll make you think about the song after it's done?
That definitely gave me chills when you said that. So then you have to take that idea to all of these guys.
Yeah, these wonderful guys.
So do you find yourself writing the lyrics first and then going to the music?
Yeah, I write the lyrics first because it just might be the chorus line, you know, that says, you know, like for the Lord have mercy, it was there's no haunted houses in the ghetto. But that actually ended up being the verse. And now so what does this melody sound like? You know, so Armani, my piano player and music director, I'll hum out the root note to myself until I can get home and multi-track it. And then I'll be like, hey man, I got this idea, you know, sang with Oscar, you know, I want to do this thing, and you know, and then I can pull from different sources of what I'm trying to reach until we come to a final stage that's like, ah, we all like that, you know.
Yeah.
You know, and that's how it goes down.
Nope. Now, Paul's the manager.
Yes.
He is.
Where do you come into this process?
Man, I'm just a guy who was lucky to be around when Dave needed help.
No.
But you live the music. You say that.
I do live the music. I mean, I play the music constantly. I sit with it. I do everything. It's around me. If I'm cooking, I have the music going. When I'm in the bathroom, I have the music going. So it's always, it's in the car with me. Mm-hmm. So for me, I guess I'm a constant critic of the music. And there are times when I hear things, oh, that's really cool. And then I hear the storylines, and then I'll start to make connections of, oh, I see where your head was really at. And so this is where you're going with that. I said, oh, that's cool. Let's keep going. Yeah.
Now, how did all of you come together?
Diabolical. So I guess to start, I have been in the entertainment industry for about 20 years. Done a lot in Buffalo. Done equally as much abroad. Even living in other states and cities, trying to chase this dream of being a musician. But in that dream, you come across these periods where, you know, I'm just, at least for me, I'm like, no disrespect to cover tunes, but we've heard the same cover tunes over and over again. And that's not to knock anybody that does them, because of course you can do it in homage to pay respect to who paved the way for you. But where are the new cover tunes? Where's the future headed that the new people from hip hop are gonna sample? You know, and if we're just still almost running out of samples and music to listen to, you almost gotta go dig for it now. So, you know, it was my need to wanna punch that in the face. And I was kinda discontented with the local music scene and its excessive repeating of that, you know? And I just said, you know what? I don't wanna play ball the same way no more. You know, I'm gonna drop just being this one-dimensional figure that you've kind of cornered me into, as Dave's just a drummer, you know? And I'm like, hey, I got some other skills too. I songwrite, you know? I play a couple of other instruments and I can build these soundtracks that really means something, and give back to music something that means something. So my first album I did, it wasn't even a band together. I kind of manifested Inner City Bedlam into existence. I said, I'm gonna put this band of guys together. And it started with Oscar, my guitar player, who when I was living in Cold Spring with, I was on the worst street in Cold Spring, and he would, oh, no worries, I'm just gonna bring my guitar. And everybody's looking at him like. But he was fearless, and he would show up, and we would start going through some of my theory. Then I met Jackson as well, and Armani. I knew Jackson for a while. He's on bass. And we had worked together doing some things previous. Armani was new to me. He was introduced to me by our trumpet player, who's not with us today. We don't have our horn section, but he said, you gotta check out this kid, Armani Works. And I'm like, that's his last name? And he's like, no, I'm serious. His name is Armani Works. I'm like, and Armani works. Like, he really, it works. And so Rob, my percussionist, Rob knew me. Rob's from Rochester. And Rob had came to a couple of drum clinics I was doing at House Guitar, shout out to Bruce. And I said, man, one day we're gonna do something together. I just don't know what it is. And that was like six years ago. And here we are. And Paul was the person you know, he minimalizes his, you know, I'm just this guy, the other guy, you know, but Paul was the person I said, listen, I know the path to get there. I just need somebody to believe in it. And he's been down like four flats on a dump truck since then, so.
Thanks, Dave.
So is that how have you all stayed together that long? Because that's an impressive run of 7 years. So how have you all stayed together for this long?
Prayer. No. it's in this day and age, it's hard to keep a band together. The definition of a band has really lost its flavor. A lot of people are just kind of, you know, we're in a new society where it's like, okay, you're jumping from a couple different bands. And it kind of, to some degree, has to be that way. But to have a band where, you know, it means something to everybody when we come together, we're like the super friends, you know? So we all come from separate styles, separate lifestyles. But when we come to make this connection together, it's explosive.
Do you think the music is a big connector between you all, but also to other people that are listening?
Absolutely. The music speaks for itself, but I think all the guys would agree that the music is, it makes you look inward, you know? And I always go crazy about that, but we're all here together, you know? So that inward look is something I think we all have in common, we all share.
So obviously you have a strong Buffalo connection, but you've lived in other cities. And one of the things you mentioned when you were talking to Thomas, inner city bedlam, yes, is in Buffalo, but it can describe any city. Mm-hmm. Can you think of some things you've seen or things in the news that bring you back to some of the issues here in Buffalo?
Being politically correct?
Oh, you don't need to do that here.
Okay,
excellent. I was waiting for this.
There's funding of certain parts of town that have gone on very strong that have allowed certain people to remain in office for a long time. And there's other people from off that same tree that also kind of control where the dollars and cents go. And meanwhile, the best we can do for the East Side is talk about recovering the expressway. There's much more damage that's been done that, you know, the dollars and cents that is needed could really help, you know, people from the East Side all over and how vast the East Side is. There's infrastructure that needs to be repaired. You know, there's lives that need to be repaired. There's the afterthoughts of what happened with 514, which, you know, there's still people that are afraid to go to the store, or at least to that store. You know, so, you know, after the lights, camera, and action have all, you know, uprooted and gone away, what are we doing? You know, it was nice that people were being fed when 514 happened on the streets, and that was a daily thing. Then you just watch it trickle off, and then we go back to the same. It's like going back to the beginning of a book. You ever seen a movie, Inception? You know, it's like, wow, I think I'm in a dream within another dream, within another dream. And it's just, I'm never going to wake up because nothing's coming to pass.
Mm-hmm. So what you're saying, the dollars don't make sense, but the scent itself stinks.
Bars.
That kind of, and that leads me into my question. You know, lots of promises were made from local and state leaders in the aftermath of 514. You guys have said it shouldn't take a tragedy to humanize mm-hmm. black people.
Right.
Does it irk you to see these folks swoop down on your neighborhood? Because if I'm not mistaken, you both grew up in and around mm-hmm. that neighborhood.
Absolutely.
I would assume some of these guys did too as well. Does it irk you to see these people swoop down on your neighborhood, make these proclamations, you know, in the aftermath of 514, the days after, and then 2 years on, mm-hmm. it's kind of like, well, where are we at?
The East Side, especially the Cold Spring area, is more than just a mural on a wall. You know, it's more than a memorial on the corner of a street. You know, it's it should have been a flashpoint to ignite something even bigger that is not just an idealistic version to gentrify and, oh, let's just come in and throw a whole bunch of money at things that we don't include people about. No,
right.
No. Let's meet. Let's have these discussions, you know, really, really like good discussions, you know, that when you leave each discussion, we're a little bit closer. You know, when I look at what they did for, say, the medical corridor, you know, don't anybody think it's a little bit strange that, you know, the medical corridor came up how it did, but Main Street is still a hot mess, and you're probably going to destroy your control arm and your sway bars and everything else. How do you have the Jacobs Executive Center and then Main Street right there is all a hot mess? You know, I'm just wondering where these priorities lie. Or even, I could really go on. But it's really, it is annoying and it is very discontentful to see that, you know, and see other neighborhoods too that I've seen, you know, down close by the Seneca area that also, you know, when I knew, my mother grew up in the Jefferson Projects, and to see areas near that to be completely gentrified, like, okay, we're gonna fix it up, we're just gonna throw money at it. And now the rents and everything else are too high for anybody who originally lived in that area to even stay there.
Mm-hmm.
And it makes me wonder now when you look at over at the Perry's, what's gonna happen once they, are they gonna also, is BMHA gonna follow through with that as well? You know, and the reason we're in this ready stance of, you know, is this going to happen or is it not? Because so many times we've been told it's going to happen. It's going to happen. It's going to happen. And guess what? One generation, another fades out, and things will still stand. How long has that building been standing here? We look out your window. What's happening mm-hmm. here? You know, so, you know, there's and all the higher ups always explain everything away, you know, very good. Oh, well, we needed to do this and we needed to do that. And because so we can make Buffalo a sustainable force going into the future. I'm like, but I'm living in the now. My people are living in the now. So this is not even just about racism. It's about, okay, if we got allies, come in and help us. It's not because we could do so much better together. Mm-hmm. We really could.
Do you feel like you're being talked down to by these folks?
Oh, no, they won't talk down to me. You know, because I'm going to kick them in the bleep that out. This is me, man. I feel like when they go on these quests to have these conversations or even the behind the wall conversations that we talk down about. Because if that wasn't the case, then there should be no problem why a lot of these things shouldn't have gone forward. You know, you got state leaders saying that this is their backyard. Well, then rake the leaves. Shovel the snow.
I live on Riley. So I watched everyone swoop in. And to me, once again, it was like our trauma is always being monetized.
Right.
People come in.
Good point.
And always it's about money, it seems like. Being from a people that been brought to a continent, enslaved, and whose bodies was once again monetized. Everything we've done monetized, but for someone else, not for ourselves. Rarely do we see the money come in and where it's going to properly help us. It's good that people have ideas and they come up with, oh, you're going to do this, we're going to clean that up, oh, that's wonderful. But what does it really mean to the people that are living there? Like Dave said, we have a ton of things in the area. I mean, I got so many speed humps everywhere. I'm tired.
Jesus Christ.
My car, I'm doing this, just getting to my house.
Hydraulics.
Around the corner.
Not even in the West Coast. It's crazy.
But yet, and I understand why there might be need for some, but is it helpful to all the residents that are there? Snow plows. Everything is, when you look at the east side, it's kind of done like, okay, well, we'll kind of get to it. We'll get to it when we have time.
Mm-hmm. Same with the snow shoveling.
Right, but in other parts of the city, it's like okay, well, yeah, it's immediate.
You can see who's more active politically by the things that are done.
And why should it take a 514 for a tops like the tops that location to be renovated? Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. It already needed dire changes before all of this happened.
Yes, it did.
You know? So, you know, it shouldn't have taken a national tragedy. Mm-hmm. A national tragedy in our backyard for them to say, oh, you know what? Well, here's all these dollars that we've been sitting on to try to do something nice. Let's do something nice for them. You know, I'm like, nah, that's it's the most serious form of cringe it can be. Mm-hmm.
Well, if you had the authority to make the changes that you wanted to make, mm-hmm. what's, you know, some of the first things you would do for the East Side?
First of all, once again, I'm a serious believer in taking the power in your own hand. You know, there have been other celebrities and people from here who have had money, and I feel like they haven't done as much. And I'm not saying that they're required to, but at least as far as I can see, you know, and I'll put it this way in the most politically correct way I can say it, there's other groups of people who also reside in the East Side who, when they come together and buy a property, they buy a property, they put open a whole bunch of stores, and something is not right that we can't be afforded those same opportunities for Black businesses to flourish. I think we need to, it's a lot of vacant spots. There's a lot of people that own those vacant spots who are on a list probably in City Hall somewhere, who are probably on the beach right now hanging out in Florida, mm-hmm. and you know, we don't.
There's no accountability.
There's no accountability. So that land can go forever mm-hmm. without nobody being held accountable of what's going to happen to that land. All these vacant, if you drive to the East Side right now, vacant spot, vacant spot, vacant spot, bodega, vacant spot, church,
vacant liquor
spot. Liquor store. Vacant spot.
So, liquor store.
Exactly.
Church.
Yeah, corner store again. So mm-hmm. it's like, that's the first thing I would do is there's a lot of business talent in the East Side. There's a lot of people who are doing projects out of their own homes. You know, where's the SBA, you know, people that can help or help them become a part of the SBA so their small business can get developed right there? Where's the dollars for minority, for Black and minority and women and I mean, get it all going. And then guess what? We can all benefit from that. You know, now the whole city can come over to the East Side and feel like, oh, okay, cool. Not just, you know, have an exclusive bike ride that mm-hmm. takes up all traffic yes. through the East Side. Mm-hmm. Yes, I'm talking to you.
on 514, on that day, you've got an interesting story.
On that day, actually my son at the time was working at Tops, and this had to be the one Saturday of all the times he's been there and he wasn't working. And we just happened to be, you know, sitting in the house, my wife and I sitting downstairs, and a neighbor says, hey, did you hear those gunshots? Gunshots? No. And we look on the news, and there's this thing, Buffalo's on the news. The top, there was a mass shooting. So my son comes downstairs and he's like, wow. He said, thank goodness I wasn't there. He said, I would have been killed because I definitely would have been helping everyone get away. And so I spent the rest of the day thinking, like, thank goodness he wasn't there. And I know he means well, but I would have rather he had tried to hide if he were there. Mm-hmm. But being the child that we raised,
he
would have helped everybody. He would have been killed. And I don't know if I'd be here talking right now, or I'd be this calm. Mm. I'd probably be overwrought with emotion. I'd be very angry. And I'd be mad at the system itself. Because my thought is, why didn't you kill him? Why didn't y'all shoot him down? Because how many times, I mean, Black men have done very little mm-hmm. and have been no problem gunning them down. And yet, hey, it's all on the line of duty. Hey, it's what we do. He was violent. This cat wasn't violent.
And I mean, I'm sorry, I don't mean to cut you off, but in a violent, in a sense that not only am I going to violently do this thing that because of some culture that took me on to believe in that, but I'm gonna tape it and put it on Twitch to make it look like a first person shooter.
Yo, mm-hmm.
So this person doing all these things, you can take peacefully, you know, after he done used a weapon and went in there and killed all these people. I mean, and we talking defensive people. We talking older people. My mom used to go to that Tops every Sunday after church, you know. So what if she was just going, and I have family running around the corner from there as well. So, you know, the rate of peace to take somebody so they can stand trial for these egregious crimes, 10 people, you know, and it could have been more. Could have been more.
But the awesome thing is that this area that he attacked is considered a food desert.
Right.
Mm-hmm. Like, we need a supermarket. Mm-hmm. So, once again, the whole plan of destroying the community, it works. Because now people in the community are scared to go there. Mm-hmm. That place should be crowded constantly. And now I hear a lot of my neighbors saying, no, I don't like going there. Why? They're afraid they're going to get shot. You shouldn't have fear to go into your supermarket, just like a school. You shouldn't have fear to go to school. Mm-hmm. What are we going to do about it? But we can see how it goes down.
Paul, how's your son feeling two years on?
He feels good about it. He left Tops, but that was for other reasons. But he was, I think he felt fortunate that he wasn't there that day. And every now and then it crosses his mind that, wow, I could have been one of the victims. But he didn't have to receive any counseling or anything. There were a lot of people that had to receive counseling for it. Mm-hmm. I mean, and so when we look at that day, this guy managed to drive 300 miles. It was about 300 miles.
Yeah.
I mean, how much hate do you have in you
to come somewhere,
to take a long drive, then go shoot people up, kill them? Now, what kind of person is that? And I mean, he sat there, he talked to folks before he did it. Mm-hmm. He had a whole strategy of how he was going to attack.
When we were speaking last week, you mentioned, you know, the imagery from that day and the days afterwards. Kind of a mixed bag, because obviously people were out on Jefferson helping people. You know, they had food, they had beverages and things like that. But, you know, you kind of described it as a circus-like atmosphere.
I felt like it was a zoo.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
I felt like one of the primates that people love coming by. Ooh, what are they doing today? Knocking on the glass, disturbing me, trying to get me riled up.
Right. Uh-huh.
You know, and a lot of our communities are set up to keep us kind of contained. And now it's all these faces I've never seen before coming in. And yes, I feel a lot of people felt bad, but the way it was done, it became a zoo, a circus. Everyone's entertaining, and now we're gonna party. What are we celebrating? What's the event? Mm-hmm. You know, people are hurt. And they did bring food all to all the houses. I mean, it was good because we couldn't get to the store anymore. There was no store. And then the store the one they had us go to, was on Elmwood out in North Buffalo. Why go to North Buffalo? We can go to the West Side Tops. Mm-hmm. So there are a lot of different thoughts I had on that day and that time. Cops stopping me when I leave my house. Just get off the street. I said, I live right at this house. Oh, okay. Where am I now? You know, I live here. You saw my car just come out. I got to see ID. What? I don't know. It was a really tough time. Mm-hmm. And so I was just happy sometimes just stay in the house and just watch. And I did like them. I watched people walk up and down the street. Oh. everyone from the dude with the cross.
Oh, Lord. There was a guy pulling a giant Jesus Christ type cross up the street with wheels on it, by the way. I don't know what that... I don't know what that was supposed to do. You know, no disrespect to nobody's religious preference, but it, you know, at that moment we didn't. I just felt like people were coming there. Like, who comes to the side of a tragedy just to look at it and cry? Where were you before the cry?
Mm-hmm.
You know, don't feel bad now. You know, and then come on, be like, oh my God, this is terrible, and it is, but. Thank you. Thanks for coming. Like, I don't know, you know, where the action should be from that. Well, I know what the action should be, but, mm-hmm. you know, if that is your only action, you know, then you're wasting your time.
It's reality TV at its best.
Yeah, that's a fact. Mm-hmm.
And so through your music, mm-hmm. you're trying to create empathy.
Maybe.
And the maybe. Well, can you talk about importance in doing that?
Is it an importance in creating empathy
through your music?
It is our job as musicians to be the messengers. We're the poets. We're the living Bible.
Mm-hmm.
Really, in a way, you know, chapter one is. This song, chapter two. Oh, well, if you read a little deeper, you know, we are the proverbial. You ever see those smack competitions where people get up, they get down real low like this?
Now, yes, I know exactly what you're talking about.
That slap could be empathetical. Bars.
Yes. Yes.
That slap could be. It could be a slap of love.
Mm-hmm.
You gotta remember though that your audience members, the people listening, they gotta have spotters in case they fall down.
Right. Absolutely. He's done.
A little too much about this.
But once again, when is the last time a song has come on that challenged you? There's my question to you. That may not just Sweet Caroline. Oh, we can all sing that. But what happened to that song that's good? It's like, oh man, this is good. But it also, after you listen to it, you're like, wait a minute, let's go back and play it again. We've not, that era is not dead. And there's a band out of Buffalo that's bringing that to the world.
Mm-hmm.
And that's this band.
And what's their name?
We're the most dangerous band, Paul.
I know that, but what's the name of the band?
David Jonathan and the Inner City Bedlam.
There you go. And now you know.
And now you know.
You have such a great energy and a positive aura. And the things that you're talking about in your songs are mm-hmm. very frustrating and emotional mm-hmm. and painful.
Mm-hmm.
How do you perform these songs, and do you relive these painful memories as you're performing?
Woo! I've had times where I've been in the middle of performing some of these songs, and it's, for some reason it'll revisit me, you know, because I can't exclude myself from that. It's, you know, some of them I've literally lived through myself. They're my self experiences. But I'm hopeful. You'll get that reference later. I'm hopeful that we can come together and this next thing, you know, we can, because I have happy songs too, you know, but it's the songs that stand out that make people go, whoa, you know, that's something that's something to say, that's something to think about.
Where do you find that hope?
And I find that hope in seeing that besides a Buffalo Bills game, we can come together on other terms and have conversations with people, you know, and not just agree on, you know, Keon Coleman. By the way, welcome to Buffalo. That can talk about these things and come together with these things that we should not have to wait to Sunday to be like, oh, we're on a one accord. Three, two, one. All right, bye. Now the person that you might have just been cheering next to, you're giving the bird to because you're in traffic trying to get home.
Right.
Yeah. You know, it's something is wrong with
everyone's leaving the stadium back to their racialized neighborhoods.
Absolutely. Mm-hmm. Right.
And you set us up a little bit for, I know, one of the songs you're going to be performing today. Can you talk a little bit about the new album and some of the themes?
So the new album is called And Now You Know. The first album was called 400. 400 was pertaining to the 400-year anniversary of the transatlantic slave trade and the many forms of music that was brought through that. There's a story that follows that. And after that story comes this new album that's like, now that you've seen all the stuff in the first album, which in the first album we're talking about a lot of, you know, we talk about love. We talk about crawfish and jambalaya, you know. We have some good stuff in there, but then, and now you know it's like, okay, you won't listen to the second album and say, oh, I didn't know. So it is peeling back the scab, you know, but also still giving hope to that scab can heal.
Is there a difference emotionally between performing in the studio versus performing live in front of a crowd?
I think so. I think when I'm in the studio, I still like to lock in as if there's a crowd there because it helps me feel the emotion of what I'm singing or what I'm trying to, you know, get out. Live is a different experience because, you know, these glasses are mirror tinted, but I can see the faces. And because I can see the faces, it really drives. I've seen a lot of faces that have, you know, I've had members of law enforcement come up to me about some of my songs that I thought they were gonna be upset about, and have cried, and hugged me, you know. Which, wow, you know, I'm sure they have stories they'll never be able to tell me, you know, but. The live aspect gives me a chance to interact directly with the crowd. Mm-hmm.
What do you hope happens next after they hear your music?
Revolution. Whatever that means.
So let's talk about what you're going to play today. Mm-hmm. What are some of the messages in the songs?
There's one song I kind of gave away already is, you know, the message in Lord Have Mercy is, you ever look at as something that's so bad and you go, man, Lord Have Mercy. And that could mean a lot of things. That could be, ah, that chicken was good, Lord Have Mercy. Or that could be, wow, this is really sad, Lord Have Mercy. But the point is that there's no haunted houses in the ghetto. Why is that? You know, in a song we have called Hopeful, you know, it's almost looking back like, okay, now that we've come this far, you know, and I've said some things that might have jarred some people, I'm still hopeful that we can work this out in this lifetime while we're here, you know, because tomorrow's not promised to us. So I'm hoping we get it together. That's what I really want. Because this division and this long history of division and segregation in our city has got to go. It's just not going. It doesn't fit where Buffalo's headed. It doesn't. And the old regime does not like that. So, my songs are also to pee off people. Mm-hmm. Because fine, fight me. Like what do you want? Like I don't know. I mean that. Okay, let me be good. Shake my hand. And let's talk about it, you know. But I'm hoping that these messages in the music moves people's soul to love, to first of all to educate themselves about what's going on here. In case you didn't understand, this is what it is. Now that we got this is what it is, how do we now make peace with that and then come together to help your brother or your sister up. You know, let's ignore the politics for a second. Let's just look on the human condition of people and see that some of these things going on are wrong. That's what these songs are supposed to do.
We've got about 5 minutes left, and I would be remiss if I didn't ask you, who are your influences? Who are your musical influences?
Man, I'm Curtis Mayfield, Donny Hathaway, Gil Scott-Heron. Gil Scott-Heron. James Brown, you know, Bootsy Collins, The Messengers, that had something to say that you remember, you know? Those are, to me, my musical heroes. Certain writers I loved, you know, I love a good writer, for sure.
And you've performed with an impressive amount of musicians. You've opened for
some.
You want to name drop a little bit? Can I give you the opportunity to do that?
Of course I can do that. T.I., Kendrick Lamar, Chris Brown, as I've done individually. We just came back from Augusta, Georgia. Shout out to Cool Kim from the UMCs. We did a hip-hop barbecue, like a Legends hip-hop barbecue. And Dinko D from Leaders of the New School, they used to rap with Busta Rhymes. Mm-hmm. They was there, gave us mad love. Akil, the MC from Jurassic 5, mad love. We're gonna be doing some collaborations with them in the future as well. Yep, yeah. That's just broke here today. So one way or another, we gonna slap everybody's head. Like, it's what it is, just like that. Remember? Remember this, that's a slap when you get down low.
Thomas will be your spotter.
Yeah. This has been a very special Friday edition of What's Next. We want to thank our guests, David Jonathan and the Inner City Bedlam, for joining us today. This is WBFO News in Buffalo, Toronto Public Media.
This is WBFO and WBFO HD1 Buffalo, WOLN Olean, and WUBJ Jamestown, your NPR station.